llamado en una lección de derechos humanos para la Unión Americana. Beatriz Salas amplía la información.
Decidir sobre quiénes serán los portadores de la antorcha en la ceremonia inaugural de los Juegos Olímpicos de Invierno en Pekín es la responsabilidad de China, y Estados Unidos no está en posición de hacer comentarios despectivos. Así respondió Pekín a la reciente interferencia de Washington, quien aseveró que la elección de China del atleta de la etnia Uyghur, Denijir Jilamujian, para llevar la antorcha olímpica es un esfuerzo de Pekín para distraer la atención del llamado genocidio en la región de Xinjiang.
Los llamados comentarios de genocidio de Estados Unidos son la gran mentira del siglo y exponen su intento de politizar los Juegos Olímpicos de Invierno y su siniestra intención de utilizar el tema relacionado con Xinjiang para difamar a China.
China asimismo acusó a Estados Unidos de mentir de manera descarada sobre las minorías étnicas, mientras olvida sistemáticamente discriminaciones en su propio suelo.
Estados Unidos llevó a cabo un genocidio contra los nativos americanos en el pasado y ha discriminado sistemáticamente a las minorías raciales a largo plazo. La población de nativos americanos se ha desplomado de 5 millones a finales del siglo XV a unos 250 mil a principios del siglo XX, reduciéndose a una vigésima parte. ¿Qué es el genocidio? Las políticas que Estados Unidos ha impuesto a los nativos americanos son un verdadero genocidio.
Zhao, además de criticar la discriminación racial contra los africanos y asiáticos en Estados Unidos, dijo que elegir a un atleta de la etnia Uyghur muestra que la política de China de promover los deportes de invierno y mejorar la salud de las personas está beneficiando a individuos de todos los grupos étnicos y prueba que no existe discriminación.
Lo que Estados Unidos debería estar haciendo es revisar cuidadosamente sus propios crímenes históricos contra los nativos americanos y tomar medidas concretas para reducir la discriminación racial contra estas personas y otras minorías raciales, como los africanos y asiáticos.
China, en reiteradas ocasiones, ha instado a Estados Unidos a dejar de usar los asuntos vinculados con Xinjiang para difundir mentiras, interferir en los asuntos internos de China o intentar detener el desarrollo del país. Advierte que, de lo contrario, Pekín dará una respuesta más contundente a la luz del desarrollo de la situación. Beatriz Salas con información de Niloufar Shakuri, Hispan TV Noticias.
Migrantes de todos los rincones del mundo duermen bajo su mismo cielo estrellado. Me los encuentro en las calles, en los cines, en los supermercados, y el olor de sus comidas me embriaga de placer. Todos ellos son mis vecinos.
Y yo aquí vivo, bajo sus leyes domésticas, pago impuestos y mis manos producen la riqueza nacional.
Soy parte de esa comunidad que vive, trabaja y sueña con una mañana mejor para nuestras familias.
Casi todos migrantes como yo, casi todos soñadores como yo.
Trabajemos pues en la construcción de otra nación que nos haga dignos.
Seamos los arquitectos de nuestro sueño colectivo.
Esta radio no tiene comerciales porque tú nos apoyas. Si ya has hecho una aportación económica, te damos las gracias. Si no, hazlo ahora en kpfk.org o llama al 818-985-5735.
Así llegamos al final de esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Nuestro más profundo agradecimiento a todos los medios y personas que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en iPod o en forma tradicional en www.kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
They told me, you know, we'll give you a day, we'll give you a week, however long it takes for you to accept our help to be healed and to become a child of God and denounce being gay.
Honoring the memory of Dr. Anonymous, coming up on the Rainbow Minute.
Bye. got three quarters of the way through several times and was like, well, I have no idea how this would end, so I have to start over. But one thing I know is I can't end a story without hope.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Nicaragua's NGO Purge targets its oldest queer group, Gay.
Well, coming up next, we got Bathrob Spears Broadsides, the March 24th, 2022 edition, 2 hours long, and mostly made up of reports from Hell's Trail, I should say the demolition of Hell's Trail as a fire hazard, even though there have been no fires recently there. Though apparently last year there may have been some. And more as well. I'll probably go into the Huff meeting and wander through that one. But there may be a few surprises, so stay with us. And even I may be surprised.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
So let's begin with a kind of a quick tip I got from one of our Huff members, Angel. She tells me that the Resurrection Church in Aptos at 7600 Soquel Drive has showers every Saturday from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. for all of you showering once in a week folks. I checked their website. There's no mention of it. Lots of mention of all kinds of religious services. But as to actual human services of a more concrete nature, listed on their website. So that's, I think that's true with a lot of churches in Santa Cruz, although some do provide additional benefits, to the human side of us all, simply being a middle-class club for occasional get-togethers holy pretensions. Actually verify that these showers are happening. I believe you can still... I don't know if you can get a shower currently at Kuroda's Soup Kitchen at on Morris Street, which used to be available during the noon hour, along with meals. I'm told they serve meals in sacks that you can take away on weekdays during that hour period of time. Don't know about showers. And there is a shower service at the Footbridge Services. But... actually advertise and likely provide real services, day and night storage, 8 to 10, 5 to 7 p.m. That's Footbridge Services Center, 150 Felker, Suite H. Laundry weekly. You got to use a 13-gallon bag. You turn it in any day and do it before Tuesday. I'm not sure when the laundry comes back. You can shower on Sundays there, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., with towels and soap provided, according to the advertisement online, or the notice online. And then there's electric device charging. You drop it off and pick it up later. Again, it sounds like it's likely during the 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. and 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. daily hours. Hotline 246-1234. So, lest it be thought that I'm becoming a an advertising megaphone for Brent Adams. Well, I don't mind passing on some useful information, which I hope you can use. Speaking of the Felker Street area, quite nearby, there was quite a demolition action happening on Monday when I got the word from Nick Whitehead with a phone call, and this is kind of how it all began. That was Monday the 1st. Okay, today is the 21st of March. It's around about 15 to 9. I'm talking on the phone with a cop watcher and a sweep watcher, Nick Whitehead, or Nutcracker Nick, as I call him. Hi, Nick.
Yeah, you've blown my cover.
I have. Okay. You're blown, so to speak. So you were saying that you're down at the Footbridge Services at the end of Felker Street?
Yeah, right.
And what's going on down there?
When I came there, there was a huge big white jumper, like a massive jumper in the street, and the guy didn't want to let me park there to deliver some food from the church homeless shelter. We had spare food left over.
Uh-huh.
But Brent Adams stepped in and said I had every right to park there. It's a public parking space.
Good for him.
Guys argued, said, no, we have a big homeless removal operation going on here. And just then a Bobcat machine came up the hill and loaded with garbage, and we had to jump out the way. So this was an operation by an out-of-town, looked like environmental company with the protection of Highway Patrol and Caltrans.
Did you get the name of the company?
They were starting to bust up Hell's Trail.
What's the name?
I mean, I couldn't actually get through. The cops would not let me deliver the food in there. And it looked to me like they were removing everything from Hell's Trail, because later I saw one of the well-made, actually carpenter-built shacks.
What was the name of the organization that was doing the removal? Do you have any?
I should have written that down, but I didn't.
Uh-huh.
Because that Bobcat and the cops, you know, it was a busy scene. They were wanting to confiscate my car if I parked too long and all that stuff.
How many cops were there? Did you see?
There weren't a lot of cops. I would say about four.
And did you see any homeless folks who were in the periphery, or other residents who had been watching?
There were people trying to get in. There were people trying to get out. They weren't physically stopping anybody from going in, but they had a barrier. They had a barrier they put up so you couldn't get in. But one guy on a bicycle managed to get past them.
Huh. So maybe if we were...
There were others in the street with their belongings, so just a few, not only a handful.
Huh. So you really, you weren't in a position to be able to park your car and walk in?
Well, I did, actually.
Oh, what happened?
Because Brent Adams argued with the supervisor in a friendly, jousting way, sort of jabbing at each other, and I told the supervisor, no, Brent's a good guy. He's just establishing my citizen rights to park my car while I deliver food here. And the guy said, okay, but be quick. You're a black man. He was pretty friendly.
Huh. And so you got in?
No, I did, because the barrier. And then when I got under the highway bridge and tried to get up to Hell's Trail, they said, no, you can't go in there. Everybody has to get out of there. No, you can't deliver the food. No.
Okay.
So I took it up to Brent. Brent got out a table and put it outside. We put the pizzas and other sweetbreads on the table outside Brent's place. That worked.
Did you talk to any homeless folks about how they were being treated by the demolishers?
No, I didn't, because I'm in a bit rushed today. I'm having to arrange to move stuff, but I And as a homeless person, I'm getting a place, and I have to...
Oh, very good. Congratulations.
...solicit furniture and a bed and all that.
Either way, I've received a donation of a small audio recorder for you to use if you wish to take it with you and pick it up at the next Huff meeting or whenever you see me.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, that would be a quicker way of doing things, probably.
Yeah, no, that'd be good. Are you going to be moving into housing that's centrally located, or will you be somewhere?
No, it's out beyond Slocal.
I see. So you get to the exercise
in the countryside, a little country cabin, very nice. The housing authority have finally decided that Nutgut and Nick is a worthwhile citizen. He's done a lot, and they want to put me up in style.
I see. Anything to keep you off the activist trail? Kind
yeah,
of
I know. They want to silence me.
Oh, certainly.
There is a clause in my agreement that I must not attend any further meetings.
That makes perfect sense, I've got to say. Well, that's interesting. Are you now viewing? Can you visibly see the scene? Are you?
No, I've actually moved some distance away. I'm up by McDonald's on Ocean Street.
I got you. If you have any conversations with anybody today, it sounds like you're going to be busy doing all kinds of other
stuff. Yeah, maybe later on, if I get a gap in my time frame, I could try and see and get part of the story from people, yeah.
Because I guess you didn't ask the question because you were both blocked and you're hurried as well.
Yes, both, right.
You didn't ask the question of whether they were actually giving any alternate place to go, or they're all just being dumped into the benchlands has been what they're... Was anybody being given any help? Did you see any other groups there doing anything?
I didn't see any sign of any other group.
So it was just you and Footbridge Services?
I was only there about 10, 15 minutes at the most.
And what time were you there?
I came straight to make this call.
So it was probably around 8:30 or thereabouts, I suppose.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
And apparently Abby Samuels has got stuff online. She's writing.
I'll call you back if I find anything out, okay?
Do it. And thank you, Nick. Appreciate it.
Okay, bro. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So now we jump ahead because, inspired by Nick's account, and he actually called again later, half an hour to an hour later, to let us know that there was more demolition in progress. And so we went down, Gloria and I went down to check out the progress or extent of the destruction and how it was all going and how people were being treated. And this is what we found. It's March 21st, 2022. I'm in the Memorial Cemetery area. I'm not quite sure what it's called. And there's a fenced-off series of encampments between the cemetery and the highway. And I don't know how we can get through here because there's been threat of our reports of people's places being bulldozed. And we'll see if anyone wants to talk. I'm probably too busy clearing out. So I'm talking with
Jeremy Ochoa.
Jeremy, I'll kind of catch you through the fence. Mm-hmm. And Jeremy, this is your encampment. Looks like you're packing up to go.
Yes, sir.
How long you been here?
About 6 months.
And how has it treated you?
Well, it's treated me okay. Just they kind of gave us a really short notice. You can leave, you know.
When was the notice?
About 4 days ago.
And have they given you a place to go?
No. Not at all.
What's your plan, or do you have
I guess I'm just going to start a new camp somewhere else, you know. Where else can we go? There's nowhere to go, you know. I don't want to go live at the benchlands. Why go there when we just want, you know, like, they can put us in one spot so they can shoot us one day, you know? Like, you know, that's what I think they do. They want us in one spot so they can keep an eye on us, keep us in, like, you know? I wouldn't want to know why else would they hoard us in one spot like that, you know? Just so they can keep an eye on us. That's
you're out of sight and out of mind.
Right.
Where were you before this, if you want to say?
Benchlands.
How was the benchlands?
It was horrible. You know? So this is rats, all infested with rats, and it's horrible, man.
This is a better place.
Well, it's not any better, but like the rats are.
How many people would you estimate are here?
About 120.
Really?
150.
Now, were you here when they cleared off Camp Paradise?
Yeah. I was here when they first opened it, like a long time ago, a long time ago.
And 2000, or 2001, with Larry Templeton?
Dirt Clod. His name was Dirt Clod.
I remember Dirt Clod.
Yeah. I've been here my whole life, so, you know. My dad died. They took my son away. I've had a rough time with just life, you know. And, like, you know, I haven't enough time. My brother sold the house out from under me. So it's like, what? I don't have anything, you know. I don't have anything, you know. So it's kind of hard for me to just, like, get up and start all over when every time I get something going, they take it away from me, you know.
Dig it, yeah. Move a little closer to the fence if you can.
Yeah.
This recorder is kind of sensitive.
Good.
How are your neighbors here?
Neighbors are cool. I mean, everybody's cool here. We all help each other out. You know, it's like a little family here. You know, we just help each other out. But like,
actually, we're talking through a fence. I'm standing in the cemetery and talking through this. It's a double fence that has been set up to separate campers from the cemetery area. It appears to be, I don't know whether it was set up by the cemetery people or by the Caltrans or by the city. It's not clear.
I don't understand why they want us to move. Like, we didn't do nothing wrong, you know?
It's part of their, you're worth less than the people in the houses, and therefore they can tell you what to do, is unfortunately part of the underlying narrative, for me, anyway.
Right. So what are we going to do now? Like, I don't know. Like, where is there to go? You know? Stick us in, like, places where just, like, people are so desperate for help, that, like, you know, that they're just, like, they steal from each other. Like, what the fuck? I don't know, man. This whole place is... I don't see the whole government fucking holding on by a string. You know, people don't really realize that shit, you know? Everything is. You know?
Do you have a phone yourself?
I don't. Someone stole it.
Of course, it's the standard deal. Mm-hmm. Hey.
Let me get back to work.
Where are you going?
Nobody knows.
Indeed. This is a woman who's carrying her stuff. We've been talking with... What's your name again, man?
Jeremy.
Thank you, Jeremy. Let me give you my card. You can, if you ever want to hear this, you ever get to a computer, you can hear this conversation with Jeremy, a woman who was walking through the camp, which is sort of strewn out along the highway and enclosed and separated from the cemetery by a wire fence. Where there is supposedly a place to get in.
And I then began to walk from the area that was sort of halfway between the road, Ocean Street Extension and San Lorenzo River, up toward Ocean Street Extension, where I was told you could kind of get into the area without trying to negotiate over the fence, which seemed a little more difficult for me. And so I eventually did find a place to get in, and here's some more of the dialogue.
All the way to the top.
We've reached the top of the, this is where Highway 1, you can get onto Highway 1 through Ocean Street Extension. Patty?
Listen, as usual, last minute. And together.
Quick interview for Free Radio. Talking with, if you want to say.
Call me D. Yeah, they're making us move out in last-minute efforts, and they're going to bulldoze everything. I don't know where we're going to go, because there's not enough room in the benchlands.
You visited them, Ventureland's, recently? Or?
I cruise by there every once in a while, but it looks a little dirty for anybody to want to be like stick around.
Were you? You been here for long?
Well, we've only been here a couple months.
And how are the resources? Are you getting any support from the community at all?
There's plenty of resources out here, but we're fighting a war that we're just going to keep throwing money at. I don't know. It's just like a back and forth kind of thing. We'll just move from one spot to another.
Were you any intentions to where you want to go, if you want to say?
I should just get a job and rent a room, to be honest with you, because I'm over this. I'd probably spend more time and work harder out here than I ever did when I lived in a house.
What's a typical day like, if you want to say?
Well, first thing you got to do is get high. And by any means possible. We won't go into detail about that, but it's just kind of an ongoing vicious cycle. You know? And usually get up late in the day with a couple hours left and then stay up all night. And to be honest with you, we got it made out here, but it really sucks when we have to move and scramble to try to find a new spot.
So, I don't see any particular reason they're clearing this, except that they want to try to concentrate everybody in the benchlands. Although, are they telling you to go to the benchland?
They're suggesting it, yeah.
I see we have three armed cops or two armed cops and a couple of workers over there.
Yeah, they're real nice to us, but rules are rules.
Andy Samuels is following the cops around. The woman with the camera is following the cops around, keeping an eye. But you said the police would be treating you pretty well?
They did, yeah.
Except they're telling you to get the fuck out.
Yeah, pretty much.
You can go to the mailroom.
20 to
figure it out.
20
to 12.
Yeah. Maybe you'd like to go to the mailroom?
Well, they can only get so much done in 3 hours because they're going to be done by 3, they said. And they also told us after 3, we can come back and salvage whatever is left. Well, we'll see what happens.
How much stuff have you got to move?
I've moved everything. I've moved everything that I need.
You've got a temporary new spot for yourself.
Not exactly.
A place to store it anyway, temporarily.
I'm about 20 feet from where I'm storing it.
Really?
Yeah. And I got to figure out a spot. And
I should be letting you go so you can.
Well, maybe we could brainstorm together. Maybe you can let me.
I'm going to walk down here. I see Abby.
I could take up a little space in your basement there. Help you broadcast some signals.
If I had a basement.
I got where you're at nowadays, because I remember.
I got a room.
Yeah. I remember a while back we had it was this little basement.
There's a hole in the fence here, I see, but it got fenced over again.
Quickly, yeah, they took care of that.
Yeah. The only help I'm offering is to put out what your thoughts are, if that helps at all. I don't know.
Well, I mean, for one thing, this does look bad. This looks bad.
You're talking about a big heap of stuff. Looks like a trash heap. But it is a trash heap. It's got bags and bottles and cups and such.
But it only takes a few to mess it up for the whole bunch. It motivates me to do better things.
Hang on, Gloria. Be right with you. Okay.
So it really encourages me to do other things than live outside and get high and live amongst rats and trash. You know, I can get a job, get a room, and be clean, and I can look normal.
Take it. And we have been talking with
D.
Thank you, Dee.
Thank you.
Yeah, sure.
Here's a musical break to break up this narrative. Depressing for the people who are in the middle of it.
One, two, three, four. First, you have to have a problem. That part isn't hard. The second step is everybody realizing they're like you, they're holding the same card. Step three is finding there's a tactic when everyone believes it could be true. That if all the people work collectively, there just might be something we can do and everything can change. So quick. The congressmen and businessmen and TV sets will try hard to make sure it isn't so. You don't have a problem. If you do, it's not the same problem. And if it is, well, there's just nowhere you can go. But that many times, the history is rich, though we easily forget how a meme can take hold and grab you, how it can spread out like a net, and everything can change. Dreaming, or they'll make a dream for us. They'll try to come up with a good story about why we belong at the back of the bus, about why we belong in this position, about how we don't know what we meant, about how there most certainly isn't any such thing as the 99%, but everything can change.
Everything Can Change from his album, If I Had a Hammer, which I took a look for the lyrics and some more details about the song, but I couldn't find any more. But I kind of enjoyed the song, and I hope you did.
Folks here of all different shapes, sizes, nationalities. Well, anyway, some of them are speaking Spanish. The furniture, couches, or sofa chairs, mattresses, mostly vacant campsites. People walking back and forth who look like they live here. And as I mentioned before, three cops. The path extends for quite a while, this so-called Hell's Trail. There's still a few tents that are set up. More as I move toward the San Lorenzo River. Some folks, here's a set of three tents. Looks like this particular section has not been vacated. Police officers are standing around, kind of, and walking through. And there are some construction workers who are here as well. Hanging. Yourself?
Sorry?
How are you doing?
Hey, you're going the wrong way, though. We can't see a lot of here.
I've been looking for someone. I got to talk to her.
Who are you looking for?
Abby Samuels.
Who?
The woman who's photographing.
Oh, okay. Yeah, just go through there and talk to her on the other side of there.
All right. There's an exit over here.
And this is a conversation with a police officer who I suspected wanted me out of there, but maybe he was just trying to be helpful. Who knows?
And we have California Highway Patrol. Hi. Don't say. Hey, Abby. Don't say.
Howdy.
Hi, how are you?
I'm okay. You?
A little bit frazzled.
Are they giving you any place to go?
No place to go. And really, it's been a lot of mixed messages and very confusing for everybody, and we're all begging for more time, basically. So
they're telling you to move, even though the Martin versus Boise decision says they have to give you a place to go if they're going to move you.
Yes.
That's sort of what they're doing all over town.
Yeah. The thing about that is that Caltrans...
This voice that's just coming in is that of Abby Samuels, who I really haven't spoken with in a couple of years. And she is, of course, a really ardent and devoted cop watcher who sort of sounds the alarm when the police are coming and documents. And also, she's on the board of the American Civil Liberties Union locally. And she's been here for quite a while, and she talks about it, as you're going to hear. I never got the name of the woman I was speaking to. She kind of took off as Abby describes how this essentially extirpation of people along the trail here doesn't have to... it's an exception to the Martin versus Boise. It sounds like everything is an exception these days. But you'll hear her thoughts on it. And as a person who's a voice in the ACLU, it's... it's interesting to hear what she has to say. I've been quite critical of the ACLU in many times, on many different occasions, so they've gotten better over the years, the local chapter, that is. They initially had nothing to do with any kind of criticism of the sleeping ban ordinances in Santa Cruz. But recently they have, I think, taken opposition to the CSSO, the Camping Standards and Services Ordinance, which is the new and worse camping ban that was created last summer and still supposedly is not being enforced, but rather police are acting as though it's there and using instead, doing essentially the same thing by using park closed, public nuisance, blocking the sidewalk, you name it, whatever springs to mind, it seems like, to get rid of someone or just to bully them and say, you've got to go here, we're taking your stuff, we'll be back, that sort of thing. Which I wasn't observing any particular actions where the police were telling people specifically to go that I saw. It looked like they'd already done that earlier. And people were, of course, eager not to lose what they could of their property. I presume not to be arrested or cited or otherwise hassled. And so they were obedient. And so for the Martin versus Boise protections, that's the decision in Idaho that protected campers Martin and others, or supposedly did, though there's some indications now that the Boise authorities are ignoring Martin versus Boise, or they've cooked up some way around it, which is really what this Santa Cruz's CSSO camping ban is all about, which is cooking some way to make the soup palatable for the courts so that they can shovel it down the mouths of the homeless. At least that's my view. What's needed, of course, is someone who's willing to resist the Martin versus Boise, which happened, I think it's more likely to happen if people who are housed come and encourage people to take a stand and with some real legal support or some real honesty that here you have a choice. You can resist this and take the chance that they're going to have to back off because of this decision that was made at the federal court level several years ago. And indeed, that is really what happened when the community and the Santa Cruz Homeless Union resisted back in the winter of 2020-2021 in December in San Lorenzo Park. But you have to say no and mean it and do it. And that's not so easy for folks who don't want to lose their their property. I mean, I don't, that's for sure. And actually was helped by the housed folks who came and camped with homeless folks. And that was really a theory that the California Homeless Union, the Santa Cruz chapter, said it was thinking of doing, and I was proposing it to them for how to deal with the what we assumed was going to be the eviction of people from San Lorenzo Park, and which the city has said is now going to happen in the summer of 2022 here, this upcoming year. Anyway, let's hear more of Abby Samuels and her discussion of what's going on with Caltrans and this eviction of the Hell's Trail.
Caltrans has called this a level one. Level one, it's due to the video that was posted a year ago or so on the fire. And they raised it from, I'm not sure, a level three to a level one, which means they're allowed to remove people without finding them a place to live.
I see.
That's what level one means.
And no one's taken this to court.
And what?
No one's taken this to court yet, I guess.
That wasn't what I was trying to convey. I was just trying to convey they have certain levels. And
gotcha.
If it's a fire danger, which is what they are calling this, a fire danger. Oh, thanks, Elizabeth. If it's a fire danger, then they don't have to find, according to it, it's more important to get people out rather than to get people. This is Caltrans things. So they raised it after they saw this video, and that gives them a reason to move people out and not be able to. That's a whole nother lawsuit if someone wants to fight it.
I appreciate your explaining that. Is there a fire danger in your opinion? What do you think?
No, I mean, it's an excuse to move people out. That's what happened, and it all began with Dinah Myers as mayor.
Really?
Yes.
Thank you, Abby. That was Abby Samuels.
Pushed Caltrans for months.
Do we have any documentary evidence of that? Probably through public records we could get it. If she wrote them.
Off the record.
Right.
Well, the problem is that I can't get there because they don't want me to be near the bulldozer. I was able to capture the bulldozer bulldozing all these cats, but I don't think I'm going to be able to catch because they say it's dangerous. Walk through the other side and there's an extension.
That bulldozing happened earlier this morning?
Yeah, all this was bulldozed. All this down here. All of this.
And you're pointing to the other side of the bridge. This is the kind of the upper area under the bridge.
But the Caltrans lawyers were notified.
Yeah.
They didn't give people time, so they gave people more hours.
Well done.
If that didn't happen.
And you notified them?
I notified.
Very good.
The people that notified the people. Done. Giving people, an hour before. It was rapido, rapido. 15 minutes, 1 minute. Out of here, now. That was this morning at 8 a.m. And that's how all the people left all their stuff that was over there.
And it got bulldozed.
Tents, sleeping bags, brand new tarps, bikes that were working.
We have the highway patrol, the Caltrans vehicles.
I'm scared I'm not going to be able to get down. I can walk in the other way. Ocean Extension. Now Joy's. Damn, I don't know where to give people pizza. They ordered five pizzas, but there's no one to take them. There's the stuff that they're bulldozing.
Did you get any of that?
The storage demands must be reasonable.
Has Brent Adams been here at all helping or not?
He asked if people had some very valuable items that he would store for them.
But that was...
got taken down last night. People moved all the way to the shelter.
Huh. And was it taken down by authorities or by the people unknown?
Well,
God, I got my brother. My brother has cancer.
We're talking about the fence going down.
Oh, the fence going down. So a whole bunch of people, I don't know how many people, some people moved back there. The fence was up this morning. Jeremy went back there. He called the city police, I guess. And now they, I don't know if they ticketed people, but that people had moved from the city.
That's Jeremy Leonard you're talking
Jeremy
about?
Jeremy Leonard, yeah.
A helpful police person, huh?
He's telling people there's 30 places at the Benchlands, Jeremy, to some people.
It depends on how tightly you cram people in, I would think. You know.
Yeah, like right on top of each other almost.
Right.
Do you see where Frank or Brittany is? Do you know Frank or Brittany?
I do not know. I don't think I know Frank.
Come back at 3 and pick up whatever's left. So many people.
Would you recommend that we probably, as we get back, as we record,
are there
any damages?
Well, they're going to tell. Hey, Joy.
And, of course, the wind is now blowing us all away. But Abby was also kind of, she ordered pizzas for people coming out of the encampment or carrying their stuff out. And I think she eventually may have made contact with at least somebody who was going to help her with that. I think the rest of this conversation may be hard to hear. Let's hear a little more.
Where are you? The thing is,
and Abby mentions that not only were the camps along the Hills Trail area on the north side of the Highway 1 bridge removed, and that's what we were watching happen on Monday, but previously the camps along the levee right near Felker Street were also removed. This being done without any public discussion, without any clarity that They have a place that for people can actually go and store their property, which has to be a requirement before they start implementing the formal provisions of their camping ban law, the CSSO. But they're acting as though it's there, they don't need any law. They just intimidate people and tell them to move. It's a real challenge for activists and homeless folks alike who want to stop this from happening and find it. A system of kind of an organized way of proceeding that so that the community can support the rights of folks who are outside.
Did they remove the camps from
here? Yeah, there was like 7 to 10 camp tents there when they moved people out from Felker.
Well, John?
Actually, now see the bulldozers coming up. Signs posted. Area temporarily closed. And hauling off wooden platforms and implements of the housing that people set up for themselves. And I'm now passing by the Footbridge Services building, or the building where the Footbridge Services is housed. No trespassing signs. And the dog in Frankie's U-Haul, that's a woman who's coordinating with Abby on helping people deal with their stuff.
The comment that was made by Abby and others who are working with her was that apparently the city intends to fence off different parts of the area, either between the levee and the river, the levee walk and the river, and the levee walk and the housing that is on the, I guess you'd say the other side of the levee path. Fencing happening all over town. Some of it was thankfully removed by activist work after former Chief Mills tried to fence off the town clock and fence off the post office and fenced off other areas in that central area in town, essentially to drive homeless people away. or exclude homeless people from that area. And didn't work. It was twice the fences were taken down by direct action in the wake of the Black Lives Matter protests. That, however, of course, has subsided. Aside for a moment while you listen to this.
Had a secret operation, massacring villages, killing millions, secretly bombing an entire nation. They wiretapped a hotel room. They got caught and the government was deposed because of secret documents Daniel Ellsberg exposed. One government came down, and to prevent a repetition of this fact, the next government passed the Freedom of Information Act. Each administration since then hoped it would go away, and then they finally seized the chance on a September day. They passed the Patriot Act before a single congressman had read it, but don't ask the executive how they interpret it, because that itself is secret, never to be revealed, just like their secret prisons and all the torture sessions they concealed. Then they formed the prison program so they wouldn't even have to ask compliant corporations to assist them in the task of collecting information. Every email you ever wrote, every book you ever read, every call you ever made, everything you ever said. I looked into a prism. What did I see? A police state looking back at me. Secret government men lied to congressional committees. Secret information even a senator can't see. Secret bureaucrats working with secret corporations, enforcing secret laws, forming secret juries to serve a secret cause. I looked into a prism. What did I see? A police state looking back at me. Man came forward and then he fled town. And now the secret government men mean to hunt him down. Feinstein says he's a traitor. McConnell said so too. But I'd say if we have a future, it's because of the whistle that he blew. I looked into a prism. What did I see? A police state looking back at me. I looked into a prism. What did I see? A police state looking back at me. Some people have a lot in common, such as the thousands and thousands of captive men held in windowless cells 23 hours a day in the SHUs of Pelican Bay. Some of the smartest people you'll never meet, each and every day a life on repeat. Indefinite detention is the weight they carry. Never told when they get out of solitary. Decades alone unless they snitch. Those are the rules, that's the pitch. Decades divided into different groups. A guaranteed life of repeated loops, of repeated loops. Decades divided on different teams with Latin, black, and Aryan themes. But those days are over, and it's been 5 weeks. Refusing food until the Reaper speaks. Now they're not eating anymore. They're not eating anymore. Some Some of them are in there for reading the wrong news. Some of them are in there for having the wrong tattoos. In the outside world, they might not care. But there's no free speech in there. A life lived under arbitrary authority, no human contact, no dignity. It's no kind of life at all. So 20,000 prisoners answered the call and said, we're not eating anymore. We're not eating anymore. They say California's a progressive state. Governor Brown, ain't he great? You got Silicon Valley and Hollywood stars. And 120,000 men behind bars. Hunger pangs stab like a knife, but sometimes so does life. Something's gotta change, maybe this is the start. If the people on the outside do our part. Because they're not eating anymore. They're not eating anymore. They're not eating anymore.
Two more from David Rovick's If I Had a Hammer album. One of them was PRISM. That's about, I think, a government program called PRISM. And the other was Song for Pelican Bay. And now back to this guest happened at the head of the trail leading into Hell's Trail, right at the entrance to Highway 1 as you come off of Ocean Street Extension.
So it's March 21st. It's around 12:05, and I'm talking with
Sean Darcy.
Sean, you're here at the freeway entrance, the north entrance to Highway 1 or Highway 1 North, and I kind of came upon you, a quite loaded shopping cart. You're trying to move all your stuff. Tarps, sleeping bags, tents. What else?
Basically, the bedding and the weatherproofing and the tents. We didn't really grab a lot of miscellaneous stuff. We only had a couple days' notice. It would have been really nice if we had like a 2-week notice because, like, we had a driver for a U-Haul that was supposed to be here and kind of petered out at the last minute. And left us hanging because, he was some sort of emergency or something. So I'm left having to try and do this with shopping carts instead of a U-Haul. I just need to find a driver and I can get a U-Haul. I got the money.
How much stuff would you say you have, Sean?
To keep it real, this is about, it was a 3-bedroom home. Basically, without, you know, pretty much a living room.
And is your place still set up along Hell's Trail?
I have my tent still up in a mattress, and the big furniture we left, I mean, we've been here for quite a long time, so we accumulated some more comfort to home than we normally would have.
How long have you been here for?
About a year.
In the same place? Or?
Maybe not about a year. I was in a fire, and I was in intensive care for 11 days, so I was gone, and then while I was gone, they got eviction notices where we all lived, and it was like a 7-household encampment at one time. So right now, it was only a 4-household encampment, so...
For how long were you in that 4-household encampment?
I've been in at least a 2-to-3-house encampment now for about 5 years, so...
Are we talking two tents, or are we talking actually structures?
Actual seven tents at one time. Yeah, seven separate households.
How did you fare when the rains hit?
Where we were, it wasn't too bad. There hasn't been a lot of rain lately, but where we were at on this hillside, it was just treacherous to be able to walk up and down on it after it rained without hurting yourself, without slipping and falling down, sliding down.
What would you estimate is the fire danger here? That's the excuse I'm told that they're using to clear people away.
I would have to say, because there's a lot of light, flashy material down here. Mainly like the tents, they burn pretty quick. If they were made of fire retardant material, that would be awesome. But I'm sure there's only a select few tents that are ever made of that. The biggest fire hazard would probably be embers from fires that were too big. I didn't notice any real serious hazards besides like the candles, candle wax, spreading, dropping, burning through plastics and stuff like that. There actually wasn't really that many tent fires down here. I can think of only none, actually, tents that actually burned down on fire. There may have been one a long time ago, but there was no serious structural damage to any fire hap. Most of it was just we had someone was cooking something and had a fire, and we got called on because they were using wood instead of charcoal, so they could smell that they thought the forest was on fire.
How much of a community was there here in your view, or was it mainly a small community that you were a part of? Was there a broader community here at all?
There was a while back. Both heads of the trail were full from the bottom, from the tail to the top. And I came in with just about after that one head of the tail was taken, that one down along the river, that trail. That was taken out, and so it was just this one trail from here alongside the freeway here, which I noticed that if there's some things that could have been done, it would have made it really nice, like a tarp back wall for this whole thing so the people at the cemetery didn't see us. And then other than that, because the people on the street, on the freeway that drive by, they really don't see anything from the road. I know I've been up and down that road in a vehicle and noticed that I could never see anything or anybody I wanted to see. I couldn't even see any tents I wanted to see when I would drive by until I got all the way down to the river.
Do you know if police directed people to come to either Hell's Trail or the former Camp Paradise here?
Yeah, they gave us an ultimatum where we were at. They said we had to go to Hell's Trail or we had to go to the Benchlands.
Where were you? If you want to say.
See, where was I? Where were we? I was out over by on the Highway 17.
Were they doing a justified clearing in your mind over at that time, or was it like this, apparently just to move them, to concentrate them in a different area where they're for other reasons?
I think what had happened after seven households, that it boiled down, dwindled down to two households like overnight, and I was left to, with the trash and treasures of the other five encampments, and I just couldn't keep up with it. So it kind of maybe became a nuisance with people from Highway 17 being able to see it. Normally we was checked back into the things and no one ever even knew we were there, but once COVID hit and everybody was told to stay in place, you got off the, it just was put us out in the open on the prairie, and that just caused a big old, a lot of people moved in and a lot of trash.
How long were you there for at that previous campsite?
I was there for 3 years without incident with the law enforcement.
How was law enforcement down here in this Hell's Trail area?
I never seen the cops down here until like today or yesterday. It was last week, I guess. 4 days, 3 or 4 days went by really quick. There wasn't enough time to get everything up and ready and out of there. A lot of us don't have a driver's license, but are in those who do, they don't actually have a copy of it because, you know, there's someone stole their backpack or something like this or that. And so, and their ID, their driver's license is in their backpack. And after that happened so many times, nobody wants to really just rush down to the appointment office to get another one because, I mean, that's kind of like it just...
futile.
Yeah, it's a nuisance to have to do that all the time. So we just kind of let it go, you know, same with the IDs. Besides, I don't know if a lot of people know exactly where it is, the DMV is.
And we've been talking with...
Sean Darcy.
Sean, I got more questions, but I got someone waiting. Thank you. And do you currently have a phone?
Yeah, it's died right now. I was waiting for a phone call from someone last night, but it ended up dying on me.
Is it ever charged?
Well, yeah, a little bit. It's just funny. Obama gave us all these phones for free, but then now it's illegal for us to charge them anywhere. It's really kind of made it hard. We need some electrical spots around the city that we can have our phones charged. And you know, it can be kind of scary out here for the women. I know that for a fact of how many of them need to stay with them over the ages. And their phone, they need to have, they feel a lot secure when they have their up and running phone, and there's nowhere to charge the phones after like a certain time of day. Over the shelter is the only place I know of that they legally let people any charge the phones.
How's Filker Street, the footbridge services, treated you?
Oh yeah, they treat me pretty good. I've had some problems with like getting something that was mine. You know, stuff comes up missing. You know, it's secure, but you know, things do slip through the cracks. But they do charge over there too. I forgot. Not used to going over there because I had been gone and I was at RCC for quite a while and in the hospital, so I was off the streets for about 4 months here just recently. I just had to come back out here. My friend's boyfriend died, and she really needed someone beside her, so I went ahead and came over here to help her out. She had been living with, we've been living together for about 5 years up until the time I got
her name.
Yeah. I caught on fire, burned my arm from elbow to thumb and around my legs, so I was gone for quite a while.
Anything you want to add? That this will be going out on probably on Thursday or Sunday on free radio on the net. We aren't broadcasting, but we are netcasting still.
Oh, okay.
Anything you want to pass on to whoever's listening? I can't guarantee that many people are necessarily listening, but it's also being archived, so it's being kept somewhere that people can hear it if they want to.
Cool. I appreciate you doing this good deed for the community with this talk radio. I'm glad I had a chance to say something. I wish I had had something prepared, you know, because I know I left a lot of good...
You're doing fine. You're telling me exactly what I want to know, so...
Cool. Yeah. I think it's great. I appreciate all the help from the communities that brought us foods and medical supplies and all that while we were here at Ellis Trail. We were told we're trying to make our way down to the San Lorenzo Park. We've already been told by the officers that it's going to be sometime this summer they're going to be having us leave from there. So we're hoping that we're going to have something better going for ourselves by that time that happens.
Thank you, Sean.
So what precipitated the trip to Hell's Trail was not so much Nick Whitehead's account as this message that came over from someone who was actually giving more details and who was actually staying there, and that was the woman you heard before, Abby Samuels.
Here's Abby Samuels off of Signal about 10 to 11. Read it, and she'll read it.
Okay, she said... Well, you want me to read the part about the ACLU?
Yes, why don't you start at the beginning?
Okay.
Give the time.
Well, at 34 minutes ago, Abby Samuels said, "I'm here now. I think you can get in." And then I asked if they had cleared the Hell's Trail, and she said, not yet, 14 minutes ago. People are still trying to move. Cops got a message for Caltrans attorneys from ACLU and are giving people an hour more. They had it blocked off for a while. Bulldozers were bulldozing, but they have left with their load and will come back in an hour to bulldoze more so people can come. Almost all people are still at Hell's Trail as they only bulldozed about 6 or 7 tents. They have over 70 more to go on that trail. You can also get here via Ocean Extension. That was 2 minutes ago.
And later, after we'd gone down and walked the trail, at least I did, and you heard some of those interviews on the trail, we got further reports from Nick Whitehead.
I'm with Nick Whitehead, and this is a 4 o'clock call from the demolition zone, I guess. Are you in the demolition zone of the Hell's Trail?
I've just been down to the lower end of Hell's Trail, which leads down to the river.
Uh-huh. And were you able to get through without problem? Because there was...
Yeah, there's no lawmen and no machinery.
And were there any still residents in their tents?
There were five residents, 3 men and 2 women, who had driven a U-Haul van down there.
Uh-huh.
And that's a pretty steep hill behind Footbridge Services to get down. This was a large U-Haul, and they had put their money together, and they were helping each other move their belongings. So that was a well-organized group.
Did they have somewhere to go? Were they planning to go to the benchlands?
No, they didn't have a plan where to go, and they were of a mind that the benchlands is not a fit place. They just don't like the atmosphere of the benchlands. They must have had some encounters there, maybe. I don't know. These were decent people. These were really decent people.
Mm-hmm. And this camp was at the very edge of the, near the river, near the entrance, or it was in the middle, or where was this camp that they were evacuating?
It's just right by the Highway 1 overpass.
Huh.
The freeway overpass over the river. And it's on the south side of the river, or east side. Yeah.
How long did they say, if you asked, had they been there, as far as you know?
They didn't say, but one guy said he'd been, a Latino that I met before that, said he and his friends had been here 3 years in this...
In this encampment at Hell's Trail?
I think he probably meant the previous, the original iteration, which was directly along the riverbank, which was called...
Camp Paradise.
Paradise. Yeah, I think he meant that one, and latterly he's been staying in Hell's Trail, because I don't think Hell's Trail is 3 years old.
Well, there was a Hell's Trail, I think it was closer to the, well, maybe not, to the freeway. It was cleared out, then Camp Paradise was cleared out, and now they're clearing it out, it looks like, again, or maybe an area that's close to it but not the same as it. So I don't know. I mean, that's the impression we got last summer when they were clearing out Hell's Trail shortly after they cleared out the Highway 1 and Highway 9, if you remember that, you know, where the Housing Matters area that was full of tents back during the summer.
Oh, yeah, I do remember that. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the women said they'd been told they must be out. They had been given 72 hours notice. And tomorrow at 7 o'clock is the deadline, and they were told if they haven't got their stuff out by 7, then they will be ticketed. And if they refuse to move, they will be then charged.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And, of course, I know the ACLU will rush in to defend them, because if they're not giving them a place to go, it seems like a violation of the Martin versus Boise decision, doesn't it?
They're not giving giving them a practical place to go, because if they go to the benchlands near the county government building, they are going to have to squeeze in and, in a sense, oppress somewhat the existing residents. So that's definitely an enforced situation, because, hey, you know, there are probably 50 people who are living up Hell's Trail.
At least. I'm not sure. But it looked like a lot of folks, but they were all spread out, so it was kind of hard to...
Yeah, yeah.
Did you get a phone contact for any of them? Because
no, I did not. I've had a long day, and I definitely...
Well, go back there and get a phone contact, for God's sake.
I got it. I got other things to do.
Oh, yeah, sure. Excuses.
I'm just a liberal guy trying to help out, so I have to have my excuses ready to hand.
No, that's true. I can accept that, yeah.
You're trying to upset my conscience. Don't do that, please.
Certainly not. I wouldn't think of it.
I
did get a couple numbers when I went down there, but the reason that I would look for a number for these folks at some point is that did they intend to be there tomorrow at 7, or did they just say they were out?
Everyone I spoke to seemed really up in the air about. I didn't get a sense from anybody I spoke to. That's about 7 people by now. Mm-hmm. Didn't get a feeling that they intend to resist this or be present tomorrow morning.
Gotcha. Any other service providers meandering about? I ran into
No, nothing like that. Nothing at all like that.
Uh-huh. And
as far as officialdom goes.
And you've got your exercise for the morning and the afternoon. You tend to go out at night, perhaps with a flashlight, and check things out. I'm being sarcastic.
Not here. Unless I have my favorite jackal with me. I need protection.
Good point. Well, I will say nothing more about that.
I brought that jackal all the way from South Africa, and I never told a soul about it till now. So I hope you don't broadcast that part.
I'm actually, it's too late. You revealed yourself.
Hey, I'm taking off. I'm taking off, Rob.
It's good talking to you.
Okay, bye now.
Bye-bye. Here's an earlier call from Nick, which you're now about to hear. With Nutcracker Nick Whitehead, who is a man on the scene at the latest... sweeps down at the Hell's Trail, which is right along Highway 1. It's March 21st, and I guess the time is around 25 to 4. Hi, Nick.
Hi there. Yeah, I just went in there. This camp trail seemed largely abandoned, but all the tents and other structures are remaining. So it's about 200 yards almost of left behind dwellings.
Huh.
Yeah, and some of them are metal frame dwellings, you know, concertina type walls. And so people seem to have left everything. It's just a dusty, abandoned place. But I did meet a few people that day. I spoke to 3 people,
mm-hmm.
guys, and I said there were also 3 women standing by.
Mm-hmm.
And the guys all said the same thing, that it was the highway patrol. There was no sheriffs or city police. It was a highway patrol doing this for Caltrans. And the only place they'd been told to go to as an alternative camping site was the benchland.
Mm-hmm.
They all agreed that was the only place, the San Lorenzo Park benchland. And that place is crowded. I was in there just the other day. That is jam-packed full already.
Mm-hmm. Have you any indication that anybody actually resisted this? That's really the issue for me. Anybody said, okay, I'm sorry, I'm really tired of being moved from here to there. If you want to arrest me, you can. That's fine. But I'll be staying here.
A little alarming. I thought the attitude was very, very passive.
Right.
And that's amazing. That place would be easy to block off at the bottom end.
top of the cremation park or graveyard.
What about, did you see any either service providers or activists or bulldozers doing any bulldozing?
Not this time, and I didn't hear any machine operating. So I think there's a kind of a lull, but I didn't go to the... I will now proceed to the other end and see, so I might make a third call to you.
Where are you now?
Which I think it's likely that they're going to use that bobcat that I saw this morning, which is a very narrow machine that could fit up this ravine or gully where the camp was.
And where are you now?
I'm right by the motel, the big motel on the corner of Felta Street and Ocean.
Aha, right next to Denny's.
Yeah.
I gotcha. When we went, Gloria and I went by there a couple hours ago. I walked into the, actually walked the trail too, inspired by you, I might point out. Thank you for bringing that to my
attention. Which end did you go?
I started at the, I walked through the graveyard, but the fence seemed...
The homeless guy wanting to talk with me, maybe. Hello there. How are you doing? I'm doing okay. What's your name?
Jesus.
Are you from the homeless camp down in the...
Yes.
You are?
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about what's happening?
There's the hailstorm. Where the people the homeless are staying.
Did they tell you they're going to break it all up?
Hell's Trail,
I think you meant. Mm-hmm. Yeah, is that where you've been living?
Yeah.
Where are you going to go to? That's it?
Down the street, down the street, down the street, down the street. Hey, can I get some chips?
Well, let me just answer. Allow me two more questions and I'll help you. What is the, what sort of place do you have down the street?
You got a nice place, you know. You gotta keep your clothes. You gotta shower on Sundays. You get to go there and they give you items for free. They look out for you.
What place is that? What place?
It's a homeless shelter. The homeless shelter is down the street.
Oh, they admitted you to the homeless shelter. They said you can come there.
I think he's talking about Footbridge Services, which, as I was saying earlier, does provide weekly shower access and sometimes clothing, particularly in rainstorms, and storage facilities, and also laundry service. Well, you heard me talk about it before. To me, Nick, if you want to talk more, because it's useful, I think. Could be.
Yeah, okay. Thanks, man. I'll call you back.
Sounds good. Bye-bye.
All right.
Man, I don't know how useful that last conversation was. Really hard to understand. But, sometimes you have to learn a new language to communicate or listen very carefully or just keep trying.
Down. So easy to feel like you're standing still and the when it all comes crashing down.
And that was called Crashing Down in Camden Town. It was a Patreon video from David Rovix. A couple of articles that caught my eye. This is from the March 19th Sentinel. Arkansas ex-deputy convicted in teen's death gets year in jail. This is in Carrot, Arkansas. An AP story. A former Arkansas deputy was convicted Friday of negligent homicide and sentenced to a year in jail for fatally shooting an unarmed white teenager whose death last year drew the attention of national civil rights leaders. Jurors acquitted Michael Davis of the more serious charge of manslaughter while finding him guilty of the misdemeanor charge in the death of 17-year-old Hunter Britton during the June 23rd traffic stop outside Cabot, a city of about 26,000 people, roughly 30 miles northeast of Little Rock. The maximum jail term that Davis, a former sergeant with the Lone Oak County Sheriff's Office, faced was 1 year. Manslaughter is a felony for which he would have faced between 3 and 10 years in prison. The Arkansas Democrat Gazette reported that Davis also was sentenced to a $1,000 fine. Davis remains free on bond pending an appeal. Davis, who is white, told investigators he shot Britton once in the neck during the shop outside an auto repair shop, during the stop, that is, after the teen exited his truck and reached into the bed of the pickup while failing to comply with Davis's commands to show his hands, according to the arrest affidavit. A passenger and another witness testified they never heard Davis tell the teen to show his hands. The jury's deliberations, which began Thursday afternoon and resumed Friday morning, lasted less than 3 hours total. After the verdict was announced, Britton's family and friends chanted "Justice for Hunter" outside the Army National Guard facility that was used for the trial, which began Tuesday. Rebecca Payne, Britton's grandmother, said family members wanted the deputy convicted of the felony to ensure he would not serve as a law enforcement officer again. Now what's going to happen? Are people going to have to fear for their lives again? She told reporters. Davis was fired by Lone Oak County Sheriff John Staley for not turning on his body camera until after shooting Britton. No need to catch those unpleasant details on film. Story in the Chronicle. It's actually a column by Justin Phillips, who's a regular African-American columnist. Pricey police payouts aren't spurring change, is the headline. Two of the Bay Area's larger wrongful death settlements of the past decade happened within the past 6 months and involved the same officer from the same department shooting two men of color experiencing mental health crises. But these multi-million dollar payouts shouldn't be mistaken for justice. They're the bleak cost of doing business for law enforcement agencies that refuse to change. With regard to the above two cases, the Contra Costa County Sheriff's Office employed Andrew Hall, the deputy responsible for both men's death. As my colleagues Rachel Swan and Joshua Sharp reported, the Sheriff's Office actually cleared Hall for putting himself in the path of Laudamir Arboleda's slow-moving vehicle and shooting him 9 times. The sheriff's office then put Hall back on the streets on Danville, where the deputy shot Tyrell Wilson in the face while under investigation by the DA's office for the Abuelita shooting. And the sheriff's office kept Hall on its payroll through his eventual trial, and even after a jury convicted him of assault with a firearm against Arboleda. The sheriff's office fired Hall only after he was sentenced to 6 years in prison, and did so reluctantly, according to media coverage of Sheriff David Livingston's internal memo to staff. The family of Arboleda's will receive $4.9 million, and the family of Wilson $4.5 million. One point of large settlements is to inflict enough financial pain on an institution to encourage change. But that doesn't seem to be happening in Contra Costa County. As KTVU reported in 2020, law enforcement agencies that have implemented reforms, including creating oversight bodies, saw notable declines in civil penalties being paid out. Meanwhile, departments that had minimal or no long-term oversight paid more, like the Alameda County Sheriff's Office, which was responsible for $27.6 million worth of settlements between 2015 and 2020. It's also many of those slow-to-change agencies that complain the most about a lack of funding. Just last summer, San Francisco Police Chief Bill Scott lobbied the Board of Supervisors for more money for officer training and technology. The department also cost the city more than $27 million in settlements over the last decade, according to an investigation by 538 and the Marshall Project, a nonprofit news outlet. Oakland Police Chief Lerone Armstrong also lamented proposed budget cuts last summer, saying it would hinder the department's ability to do its job. Oakland spent roughly $3 million on police settlements between 2015 and 2020, and around $57 million between 2000 and 2010, based on KTVU's data. And the San Jose Police Department, which was responsible for $17.5 million in use of force settlements between 2015 and 2020, trailing only the Alameda County Sheriff's Office, asked for roughly $1 million for officer training last month. And the Bay Area has a history of paying off families for their boundless grief. Only recently, a progressive DA, such as San Francisco's Chesa Boudin, and even moderates like Nancy O'Malley in Alameda County, been more aggressive about charging police officers with crimes. The results have been mixed, and it's too early to tell if these recent steps and the larger settlements will trigger the rapid change that's demanded in 2020. But civil rights attorney John Burris, who represented the families of both the Arboleda and Wilson, told me he knows why more officers are being held accountable for their actions. What we're seeing right now is what I call the George Floyd effect. These decisions are products of those protests, but you have to wonder when that pendulum might swing back the other way. Prosecuting a few bad apples isn't enough to cure the justice system of its dysfunction. And while these recent settlements make headlines, they reinforce a chilling truth. A system that would rather pay for injustices instead of preventing them is a perverted one indeed. And that's a story by San Francisco columnist Justin Phillips, who writes Sunday in the San Francisco Chronicle. Now, I haven't been to the Benchlands lately, but I did get a report from someone who was there relatively recently, and this is that report. Okay, well, today is the 20th of March, and we're talking about, I guess it's 2:05, and I'm on the line just having been called by one Kevin in the presence of another Kevin, and also a number of nameless animals who I don't wish to slight, so perhaps you can name those. Who are the goats, and who are the dogs, and who's there anyway?
The goats are here, and the other Kevin just said they have names. So
well, let's hear them. Come on now.
Okay, here you go.
tell him what's goat names, dog names, that's what he wants.
Robert Norris, Kevin Leland here with Casper the Friendly Goat.
All right.
Manny La Mancha.
Mm-hmm.
And Jasper.
I got everything but the last name. Give me the last one again.
Jasper.
We got Casper, we got... anyway, you got you. We these goats are present, and this is a kind of a the flock is not as, shall we say, numerous as it was about a year ago, right?
Yeah, but I'm kind of moving on past talking about that, especially where last week we got some incredible news that I want to share.
All righty, go for it.
I put in a pitch to the National Science Foundation, America's Seed Fund. To use the goats for fire control, like I talked about, for over a year, you know, but not just fire control, all the other purposes at the same time.
Huh.
Well, I heard that within 2 days and got invited to submit a proposal.
Amazing. Obviously, they aren't connected with the Santa Cruz City Council.
So this is a federal thing, and that's what I like about it.
Right.
Oh, because we're going to get our oversight right from U.S. Forestry and CAL FIRE and FireWise and private citizens that want, you know, defensible space created around their residences to lower the ignition temperature of their houses, and this is all going to happen. And what's so awesome about this grant is they only give it to high-risk technology. So where this herbivory is already proven for fire prevention, what makes the technology that we're studying unique and high-risk is that we're going to change the ratio of herder to goat from, you know, as low as 1 to 1,000 to 22. Yeah, 21 to 66. So basically, we're going to have a little over 3 goats per person, like the herd I go around with. And we're going to prove that is successful, and this is a much more humane way to deliver the service that they already know is successful. And I got a 20% chance of getting the grant, and it's $250,000. And if I get the first phase, I get a 60% chance to get the second phase, which is $1,000,000. So now it's a matter of trying to figure out how to divide that up and do this study and make homeless people the principal investigators for the study. And it's just, I'm psyched. So,
well, whatever you do, don't tell Matt Huffington, that's all. Or Huffaker, I should say.
Oh, really? Why?
Well, I'm being sarcastic, and I hope I'm being simply whimsical. He's the new city manager. I have a very cynical view of what the city's view is. Now, maybe, provided they get their cut of the goods, they might be sympathetic, or maybe they'd be sympathetic because they're, you know, just sensible people.
Yes and no. I mean, I'm not. I want to found this. It's going to be a public benefit corporation called Santa Cruz Herbivory, and I want it to benefit, you know, the whole county, but eventually the whole country, because that's the other thing about this grant. They want to make sure your research is going to lead to a real big innovation. They think big, so they're thinking housing all the homeless people this way and having 1,000,000 goats in California doing millions of acres a year. And, you know, it could happen and around the country. They want it to also work around the country. So, yeah, it, you know, I already offered. I offered the county to do litter cleanup and landscaping and greet people going into the courthouse and lift their spirits. And, you know, nobody wanted to hear it. So I'm just really excited that now, you know, on the federal level, they want to hear it. We'll do it somewhere in the county, you know. But, yeah.
That sounds good.
I don't know the politics. You do, but...
No, I don't know. I'm not a master of county politics, but I certainly wish you well on that one, Kevin.
Yeah, thanks.
As you know.
That could be good for a lot of us.
Yeah, you've got a 1 in 5 chance of getting it, you think?
1 in 5, yeah. That's everybody. So everybody who gets invited to submit a proposal, they go with about 20% of them get granted. But what was really amazing when I found out yesterday was that you get granted the first round and you do a good job and do what you say, then then you're 60% sure of getting a second. And the other thing that's unique about the grant is, you know, of course they want you to be successful, but, you know, they're not surprised if you're not. And if it's tough to prove the success, you're even better. You're even more likely to get the grant. One of the reasons not to get the grant is if you prove yourself in the first 6 months, although we are going to try, you know. But, yeah, it's interesting. And I got to thank my campmate, Yaya, for finding that and encouraging me, because I was ready to give up, you know.
I remember, yeah.
Yeah.
Although you have, you know, kind of, you have a high spirit, and I think you you may give up for the moment, but I think you pick it up soon.
Yeah, I've done that a few times, and sometimes I wonder if it's insanity, you know, like Einstein says, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. But that's probably part of my religious fanaticism, you know what I mean? Deontological reasoning. You just got to do the right thing, even if you're not expecting good results, you know?
That's faith, I guess. So Kevin,
that too.
So what do you make of the Kevin who put through this call, Goatman Kevin?
Yeah, he told me about some other goat guys. So this is so original, you know. But no, I'm not going to fake evaluate him.
Oh, we could. I don't know.
Yeah, he's right here. But yeah, I'm going to turn him back to you.
All right, thank you, Kevin. And again, you know, give him hell, or, you know, give him goat milk.
Give him goat. Great.
Right.
Thanks, Robert. I'll keep you posted.
Please do. Please do.
All right, man. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Hello. Kevin here.
Hey, Kevin. So, I know you originally went on a mission to check out, or we mentioned at the meeting, the business of possibly porta potties being removed from the benchlands, and then actually we learned from Sasha that wasn't the case, at least from her observation yesterday. But how are they looking? Are the porta? Have you checked out the porta potties? Are they as wretched as ever? Are they any better?
No, I haven't looked into any one of them. I was in a couple of them on Thursday down here, and they were fine. You know, functional.
Mm-hmm.
Get the jobs done, and they're fine. And I'm counting nine of them. I'm counting just nine that I can see from where I'm perched right now. There's a lot of porta potties. On a previous trip down here a week or so ago, the pumper truck came to service them, and there's the wash stations outside, you know, with water and whatnot. So it's all good.
Are these nine porta potties all in one location? Or are they all spread out? What's the story?
They're spread out. I turn to my right, and there's three of them at the north end near the Water Street Bridge, and I look down the paved pathway on the upper level, the upper tier here, and that's where I counted another half dozen. It seems like, well, there are as many as there are.
I got you.
None of them are overflowing.
Any, do you know if the real bathrooms are open yet, or are they still closed?
They've been locked. I didn't check today, but the other day, a week or so ago here, I saw they were locked tight. You know, they're not going to let people in there, so if somebody will just tear them up, you know, graffiti them or whatever people do.
No.
At least I don't think they'll open them up. That's why they're locked now.
How do the benchlands themselves look? I was there yesterday, and there were a lot of people kind of, it was a Sunday, of course, and it was a Saturday, and they were, people were eating pizza, they were sharing clothing, there was, I guess, a church group giving out donations, but it was right after the rain. Or in the middle of the rain.
It did just rain, didn't it? That's why I'm seeing puddles here.
Yeah.
Goats and dogs were drinking from a puddle right here in front of us. Puddle in the asphalt.
I guess it rained last night, too, but when I was there, it was
everything's groovy down here. People, this is really tapped down. All's quiet on the eastern front here. People are just going about their day, and things look real no weirdness, no law enforcement visible. Mm. One squad car that came down the paved pathway on the upper deck here, and that was it. Just everything's calm, and it's a beautiful Sunday afternoon.
Well, that sounds good. Any signs of, I was wondering about food distribution down there. Any sense of anybody, are there any food services you can see, or how is that looking?
Yeah, I'm looking over now to where I know they have the commissary, if you will. And I'm seeing what look like the stacks of stuff there. And people come and get items and take them and consume them. And so, I don't know. I don't see any emaciated people down there.
Fair enough. That's good. I know that, the flood kind of disrupted that for a while, but I'm glad. I think I was hearing it was getting back into functioning shape.
Yeah. My first venture down here was early January, I guess, and that was after the waters had supposedly risen, and they didn't get up onto the bench itself where all the tents are. There was no flood tide through there. Things were certainly soggy and muddy and sloppy for a while, but it's all good now.
Well, that sounds good. And you yourself, of course, are a known van sympathizer, if not a van dweller. Any news on any of that in the last few days?
I am a full-time van dweller also.
Of course.
And no news. No, nothing. Nothing. I don't see uproars and anything going on as far as this oversized vehicle ordinance or anything.
Mm-hmm. And no hassles from police for 72 hours.
No hassles.
Well, that's good.
I stayed in a favorite overnight spot of mine, and I don't get bothered. There's a neighbor right there and such, but I'm so stealth and low-key and under the radar that it's all good. Works out fine.
Sounds good to me. Anything else you wanted to bring to my attention or talk about for folks who are listening on Thursday, which is when this is likely to go out?
Okay, no, nothing. My reportage today is much more mundane than Kevin Leland's.
Well,
about what he's up to at all, which is brilliant. You know, what's happening with him. He seems really excited. It's a pleasure to meet him. Well, I do want to say, on or off the record, that it was remarkable that I was here. I'd looked for him on previous trips down here, and then I'm sitting here at this table on the upper deck, and just in back of the courthouse on the county building, and all of a sudden there's five or six animals come over and start drinking from this rain puddle in front of me, and it took me a minute. I registered and I go, oh, there's the goat. Oh, that must be Kevin. So it was great.
And, yeah, goats can make you happy too, right?
Bye now. They're heading off. The herd and its goat herder are on the way. Heading off. Sorry,
yeah.
I didn't hear what you last said.
I wanted to tell you additionally that you probably know this. Maybe he's told you. He lives right at the bottom of the steps that are near where you're sitting.
Yeah, that's probably. Yeah, that's where I looked the other day and didn't see him. But yeah, off he goes down the path south down the river, yeah. So I guess he's set up somewhere here.
Yeah, he's an ambulatory guy. He's up and about a lot of the time.
Yeah, to be a herder, you have to be.
I guess so.
You gotta move the livestock around and give them fresh grazing and stuff. It was right here. There was some nice tall green grass uncut by the mowers right here under these yellow tables, and they were busily chewing away. So it's worked out well.
That's good.
Well, I appreciate the call, and I'm gonna let me and you go.
Okay. See you on Thursday, more than likely, okay?
Sounds good.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
We went to the Oaks Park, an amusement park in Portland yesterday that opened up again for the warmer weather, and we were riding roller coasters. This is one of Koto's favorites. The videos for these songs, I'll do some children's songs, and there's videos for them on YouTube, animated videos done by a wonderful Norwegian animator named Bjørn Magne Spoosdal. I live in the city, travel on the subway. That's how I get around, usually once or twice a day. It can be kind of dull, till one day that all changed. When I was riding on a roller coaster train, I don't know quite what happened, but something surely did. The businessman beside me and his coffee flipped its lid. Normal operations just went right down the drain. When I was riding on a roller coaster train, normally the subway just goes straight ahead, but that day I went side to side and around it quickly sped. Suitcases were flying, they came down like the rain. When I was riding on a roller coaster train, not a good day to be eating chicken soup, cause that train went up and it went down and then it did a loop. I swear to you, that morning was really quite insane. When I was riding on a roller coaster train, first it turned a corner, then it turned around. Next thing we all knew, we were upside down. Someone's groceries were airborne, out flew a candy cane. When I was riding on a roller coaster train, on my pants, chicken soup on my cheek. By the time the subway stopped, I felt just a little weak, and there was a woozy feeling somewhere in my brain. When I finally got off of that roller coaster train,
and that was one of a number of hour-long songs from the hour-long sequence of songs from David Rovick's latest contribution for March. If you subscribe to him on Patreon, and I recommend supporting him, of course, as I always do. And let's listen to a few more of his songs. We're gonna kind of end the show with this. I've had a weary day, and I haven't gotten quite enough material to really want me to stretch it, make me want to stretch it to the end of the 2-hour period. So we're going to let David do the singing, and I'll do the you'll do the listening, and I'll probably do the sleeping. So here we go. Thanks for listening, and if you have anything you want to report regarding ongoing behaviors of questionable authorities in Santa Cruz, particularly around folks who are outside, do give me a call at the Huff line, 831-423-HUFF. 423-4833. And I'll get back to you if I don't answer you immediately.
Say you are a man of the people, and you have our interests in mind. You can say you stand with the working class and you would march on our picket lines. You can say you're with the underdogs, not the billionaires on Wall Street. And you look so earnest as you shake the hands of all the good people you meet, but you don't fool me. No, you don't fool me. We've got to make haste. You can talk so convincingly about all the hazards we face. You can blather on about green jobs with nukes and natural gas. You can reminisce about your youth and the time that you smoked some grass, but you don't fool me. No, you don't fool me. Score. Yeah, if you were in the Senate at the time, you would have voted against the war. You can say that every drone strikes a blow for liberty. You can claim this is not an empire, you just want everyone to be free, but you don't fool me. Change, you can bring us all tears. You can list all your accomplishments, say give us 4 more years. You can make the case your party is so different from the other. You can say you've got my back. You can call yourself my brother, but you don't fool me.
Was 4 More Years by David Rovix, and it sounds like he's talking about our friend Obama, Barack Obama, Nobel Peace Prize guy who dropped more bombs than any other Nobel Peace Prize winner. President is now, of course, president. I wish we had more songs by him, or about him, I should say, which cut to the chase, but... Though we had lots of songs about Trump and Bush, and maybe a few songs about Obama, like this one from David Rovix. I'm having trouble finding songs that really rip off the mask of Biden. Here's a few more songs from David Rovix's older album, If I Had a Hammer.
Wilson said he was an isolationist, and he would not send our young men off to die. But as soon as he won the race for president, that turned out to be just another lie. Truman said he wouldn't kill civilians, and he didn't want to hurt nobody's mom. But as soon as he had the opportunity, he went and dropped the atom bomb. Kennedy said he was a man of peace, but with the battle flag unfurled, Cuban shore, and then he just about blew up the world. Democrats make me want to vomit. Liberals make me want to act. They love to talk like they are friends of you and me, and then every time they stab us in the back. Every time they stab us in the back. Then there is that guy we know as LBJ. He was the one for Great Society. He sent his Air Force down to blow up Vietnam to make sure that those folks were good and free. Jimmy was the one who talked of human rights for everybody, ha ha ha. He was opposed to dictatorships and torture. That's why he loved Suharto and the Shah. Democrats make me want to vomit. Liberals make me want to hack. They love to talk like they are friends of you and me. And then every time they stab us in the back. Every time they stab us in the back. Bill was from a little town in Arkansas. He was just another Joe. That's why when all the people said don't do it, he went and signed the WTO. Some people, they might think I'm cynical, and I don't know why that would be. So even though they voted for the war, now I'm going for Barack and Hillary. Democrats make me want to vomit. Liberals make me want to hack. They love to talk like they are friends of you and me. And then every time they stab us in the back. Democrats make me want to vomit. Liberals make me want to hack. They love to talk like they are friends of you and me. And then every time they stab us in the back. Every time they stab us in the back. Robert Ross was from Ross Trevor. He was born in County Down. His family was given land there by the British Crown. He was a man born of the gentry, born with wealth and fame. But he joined the British Army to serve his queen and make his name. In the Napoleonic Wars, he fought in many lands, in Holland and in Spain and the far-off Egyptian sands. He was wounded there in battle, came back to fight another day, and he was sent off to attack the USA. York had been sacked and burned by invading Yankee men, but the Canadians regrouped, chased the Yankees home, and then the British Navy made its way to the shores of D.C. town, where General Ross burned the White House down. The year was 1814. The U.S. was in retreat. It was a Canadian victory, an American defeat. Without the French to help them, they got their ass whipped by the Crown when General Ross burned the White House down. Just been constructed only 12 years before, but it had to be rebuilt soon after this disastrous war. The president turned tail and ran like a raggedy clown when General Ross burned the White House down. He was killed a few months later. Irish rebels stopped him in his tracks. He was buried in Nova Scotia in the town of Halifax. He might have been forgotten, but he'll forever be renowned. He's the man who burned the White House down. He's the man who burned the White House down.
And those last two were Democrats Make Me Want to Vomit and The Man Who Burned the White House Down, which, of course, is about the War of 1812. Played both of those songs in recent weeks or perhaps recent months. And I'm going to end it here. Thank you for listening again. And if I can get it together, I'll talk at you again on Sunday.
To play the puppets and then yelling for war. Yelling for war. I hear the news, they managed to update the boots for those who left this war. Yeah, the technology has changed, but the thinking's still the same as in all the other wars that we've ever fought before. So we're yelling for more. Yelling for war. On the television, recreating their religion, trying to sanctify their fears. And everyone. heard people who I thought were sane, cheering for killing, terror and pain, falling on those they don't know. Cause they're scared for themselves and they're scared for their friends, so they're looking for someone who claims that he knows why we're yelling for war. Yelling for war. American to be buried by this war was given his salute. The grandson and the son of those who had to fight before, and we're still looking for reasons for what these men will have to do, so we're yelling for more. Yelling for war. Things we can't explain. The people cheer the killing, feel their friends and family walls, cause they're told by their leaders it'll help stop the pain caused by yelling for war. Yelling for war.
I can still remember how that music used to make me smile. And I knew if I had my chance that I could make those people dance, and maybe they'd be happy for a while. But February made me shiver with every paper I'd deliver. Bad news on the doorstep. I couldn't take one more step. I can't remember if I cried when I read about his widowed bride, but something touched me deep inside the day the music died. So bye-bye, Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. And them good old boys were drinking whiskey and rye, singing, this'll be the day that I die. This'll be the day that I die. Did you write the book of love, and do you have the day that I die. Now for 10 years we've been on our own, and moss grows fat on a rolling stone, but that's not how it used to be.